The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Mompos, Bolivar, Colombia, 5-6 hours south from Cartagena on the Colombian Caribbean coast in the sultry environs of this tropical paradise where I call my second home in Colombia, Mompos. But yes, this is episode 284 of the Columbia Calling podcast, going from strength to strength, and especially that in the week that was when Colombia and Latin America got their first ever winner of the Tour de France, Egan Bernal. So from humble beginnings in the town of Zipaquirá outside of Bogotá, at 2,650 meters above sea level, thin oxygen of Zipaquirá produced this young man of 22 years old becoming one of the youngest ever winners of the Tour de France. So Colombia and Colombians have had sore heads this week so far. Celebrations to be had and have been had all over the country. Incredible, incredible scenes from around Colombia. You'll have heard me, of course, on BBC Radio 5 Live in the UK talking about this event and how it is quite monumental for a country which really invests so little into sports, which aren't the men's football team, international football team. Anyway, this week, 284, the episode 284, we'll be speaking to Jeff Brown in Idaho in the United States. And it's a nice episode this week as we discuss and perhaps remember why we love being here in Colombia and why we are here in Colombia. Jeff will be speaking to us as a future tourist to Colombia and what his hopes and his thoughts are on Colombia are prior to coming, what he hopes to achieve, where he wants to go. So just to remind us and sort of wind back and to take in, you know, these thoughts and fears and, of course, the enthusiasm that we have and had for Colombia when we were first thinking about traveling here, the prejudices and, of course, the hopes. So an interesting episode, and we'll be back in segment three of the episode of episode 284 talking to Jeff in Idaho. In the meantime, I'm going to leave you in the capable hands, as we do every week now, of Adrian Alsema, the director of Colombia Report, and he'll be giving you the news segment this week from Medellin, where he is based. Of course, Columbia Reports, the most read website in English on news around the world. So an excellent source of information. And it's a crowdfunded site as well. It relies on the donations of their readers. So throw a few dollars here and there at this website and support indie journalism. Anyway, I'm signing off just for a short moment. I'll be back with Jeff Brown from Idaho chatting to us about coming to Colombia. Colombia calling all travelers. Anyway, don't go away. I'm Richard McCall, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
My name is Adrian Alsema, and this is the news for Colombia Calling for July 30, 2019. Tens of thousands of Colombians took to the streets on Friday in support of the country's human rights defenders and community leaders. President Iván Duque wanted to take part in the march in Cartagena, but was expelled by the protesters who blame his government and his party for much of the violence. More than 480 of the country's social leaders have been assassinated since 2016, the year in which the country embarked on a peace process. Ongoing revelations of widespread corruption in Colombia's national army are now implicating Army Commander General Nicasio Martinez. The Army Chief tried to obstruct an investigation into the 2013 theft of 400 tires from the 3rd Brigade in Cali, according to documents obtained by Caracol Radio. Martinez initially denied knowing about the case, but was forced to admit his involvement after he was confronted with the evidence. The corruption investigations have led to the removal of 6 generals in just 1 month. Martinez has so far refused to resign. Investigations of Colombia's War Crimes Tribunal in Medellin have revealed that the city's authorities have consistently obstructed justice for victims. The investigations into Operation Orion, a 2000 military offensive in the west of the city, baffled magistrates. The court found out that authorities kept information on mass graves secret, built apartment blocks on top of mass graves, and lost the remains of victims who had been found in mass graves. Operation Orion was carried out by the military, the Medellin Police Department, and Don Berna, the extradited boss of local crime syndicate Oficina de Envigado. Colombia's government fails to comply with one single condition that would allow it to resume the aerial fumigation of coca. President Iván Duque has announced plans to resume the controversial strategy within weeks, but his government has done virtually nothing to make this legally possible, court sources told newspaper El Espectador. This means that Duque will either have to start from scratch to resume the aerial spraying of coke with glyphosate or violate court orders. Meanwhile, congressmen from the leftist opposition and the center-right voting bloc proposed bills to end the government's repressive anti-drug policy. The first 4 of 8 bills seek to ban glyphosate and decriminalize all drug use. According to the lawmakers, the war on drugs has evidently failed. To counter drug trafficking, the congressmen want to follow the United Nations recommendations and promote voluntary crop substitution. To curb substance abuse, the lawmakers want to improve education on the dangers of drugs and create rehabilitation programs for addicts of drugs and alcohol. Cyclist Egan Bernal made history on Sunday when he became the first Colombian to ever win the Tour de France. The Tour turned out to be an unprecedented success for Colombia that saw 3 of its riders end up in the top 10 of the world's most prestigious cycling race. The 22-year-old Bernal is the youngest rider to win the Tour de France in more than a century. This is the end of this week's news bulletin. Now back to Colombia Calling with Richard McCall.
Yes, it's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Mompos, Bolivar. That's right, 5-6 hours south from Cartagena, 5 hours south from Santa Marta. I'm sweating in the 33 to 35 degree heat. It's early in the morning. But yes, on this episode 284, well, we couldn't be further removed from Mompos to Idaho. And my guest is Jeff Brown. He's a digital nomad. He's a world traveler and his wife. They like to go abroad, spend a great deal of time traveling, try and spend time in the countries, really developing a knowledge for where they are. And, well, we've been in conversation for a little bit and we figured this is a good time to discuss people's apprehensions or what they expect or what they hope to find before coming to Colombia. Of course, we always talk about what's going on in the country and once people have visited and, of course, the books they've created and so on. But this is an interesting time from a sort of travel and social aspect to discuss a little bit about how does one prepare to come to Colombia. Do you come with a completely open mind, which I think is probably a little bit difficult, or do you come having read everything and with some preconceived ideas. But anyway, before I natter on, let's just introduce Jeff Brown. He's up there in Idaho. He comes with a background in anthropology and zoology, but now he's a digital nomad. Welcome on Columbia Calling, Jeff.
Hello, Richard. Thank you. It's a privilege.
No, it's a privilege to have you here, and thank you so much for, well, writing in and listening to all the podcasts. And I know from your last email that you were off hiking in Idaho and listening to the Columbia Calling podcast as you did so. So it must have sounded a little bit incongruous to listen to my voice up in the hill country.
It's quite pleasant. You keep my mind off the miles and miles of hiking, keeps my legs fresh. I'm a multitasker. I love the research while I'm out there doing something.
Perfect, perfect. Now, your plan is to come down to Colombia in October. You arrive into Cartagena, which is overwhelming. It's, you know, undeniably beautiful, but it's a complex and sophisticated tourism destination now. Five-star hotels, six-star hotels being opened up, and restaurants as good as you can get anywhere in the world. But you guys want to come down, and your plan is at the beginning to spend 2 months, which I would say is a decent amount of time to, you know, allow Colombia to get under your skin and so on. But let's hear a little bit about, you know, your plans. Why did you pick Colombia as a digital nomad to come down and explore?
Well, Colombia is going to be the gateway to South America. I really want to get to see South America. And, it's Spanish speaking there. And I speak a little bit of Spanish, so that'll prove useful. And it's the most northern country, Venezuela being an exception. I wouldn't be traveling there. And all my friends who come back from Colombia, they are just overwhelmed with their experiences and how much they loved it and were surprised by Colombia. So those have all been reasons why I've considered going there. And then Colombia itself is such an intriguing country. It's so varied, and there's so many different regions. I really want to see how those compare.
Well, it's of course, hearing from friends about how wonderful Colombia is the best marketing that a country could possibly have. You know, rather than reading just the negative news in the press, of which there's so much. But for example, your wife is from Thailand, and you guys are going to come down. She comes, you know, with a very different cultural background. What are her impressions of what Colombia is going to be like?
She knows the Amazon jungles there, and I think she's really interested in seeing the different fruits and the plant life there. As we've traveled around, she's seen some plants that are very recognizable to things that she's seen in her country, and others that are new, and she loves experimenting with them and finding new ways to use them. It's really impressive.
Fantastic. So she's coming down with this feel for the nature and so on. So what's her background then, if she's so interested in the Amazon?
Well, she grew up in the Isan area, and her family cultivates rice and sugarcane, and she's always been very close to the earth and all the natural processes of cultivating. But she was an art educator at a school there in Thailand. And so in addition to the plants and the vegetables and things, she's also interested in the art scene and the architecture, the colonial architecture and people styles in Colombia. She told me recently that flowers. Colombia is all about flowers, which is news to me. I didn't realize that it was such a big deal in Colombia.
Oh, top industries.
And I just Googled last night about flowers, and there's the festival in Medellin coming up in a couple of weeks.
That's right. That's right. Huge, huge deal with the Sieteros and the Flower Festival in Medellin, just after Medellin's Colombia Moda. It's very interesting that that should be the attraction, that's something, you know, she brings with her from her knowledge back home. That's very interesting indeed. But let's say, okay, so you've been doing your research on Colombia and you've been listening, obviously, to the Colombia Calling podcast and so on. But what is the prior impression that you are bringing with you and, of course, your wife, the prior impressions to Colombia based on your reading, watching movies and what people have told you?
I'm about 40 years old, and so it's hard not to have the whole Escobar saga in my recollection of Colombia. But as soon as I started any type of research about Colombia, it became clear that is really a dated image, that there's been a lot of change, and you see a lot of articles talking about how impressive it is that Colombia has done such a 180 in such a short period of time. The coffee in Colombia is well known. And I think that after having listened to a few of the podcasts that you've put out and information from friends, that coffee region is going to be an area where we're probably going to end up spending a little bit of time, more than just passing through.
It's a phenomenal part of the country, the coffee zone. It really is. I don't know why we don't all live there. I say that all the time. The climate is wonderful. The geography is varied. It's so lush. The people are well-educated and polite. During the coffee boom, I guess, of the 70s and 80s, there was an infrastructure drive, so the roads are reasonably good between the cities. I can well imagine you guys holing up in a beautiful coffee hacienda for a while.
Yeah, when we originally planned to come to Colombia, I was thinking we would jump right into Medellin or Bogota. And really right off the bat, I realized that we wouldn't be happy there because we like very clean air and healthy living. And it's just really hard in big cities to find a lot of the healthy aspects that we're looking for when we travel.
Hmm. Well,
not to say they're not worth traveling to, of course.
Yeah, there's no clean air in Bogota nor in Medellin. I'll stick my head out there. Both cities have come under duress of late because of the poor quality air in both cities.
It's difficult. Traffic is on the rise, and until we change our infrastructure for transportation, it's just. It's difficult.
It's very difficult indeed. But, okay, so you've read a lot. We're about the same age. And of course, it's impossible to, look at Colombia or think about Colombia without any of the, let's say, Escobar myth, the nightmare years of the 80s, early 90s, when the cartels really were in there. The largest years, or better said, the cartel leaders were larger than life, because the cartels still exist, but in different forms. How does this affect your plans? I mean, these ideas are in your head. I don't know if you've watched Narcos or El Chapo or any of these sort of.
Yep, saw that.
Yeah, you do watch them. I mean, they're not aimed at me, so I watched six episodes or something before switching off. But did you allow yourself to be drawn in by all of these different shows?
A little bit. One thing I know it's all a little bit dramatized, and again, it's all from the past. It's not what's happening now. But one thing I did take away that I thought was interesting was that there's more. I didn't realize that there was such a connection between Mexico and Colombia, and that I'm interested to know more about that, like how regular Colombians feel about Mexico.
You, I think. That's an interesting one to develop. I do know that in the negative side of things, that the Sinaloa cartel is very much involved down here in the, let's say, production or overseeing the transshipment of illicit drugs up via through Central America and up. But the connection between Mexico and Colombia is perhaps not, you know, not brother countries, but politically speaking, and through the sort of various disasters or, you know, political instability that I would say Mexico is living now, is not dissimilar to how Colombia lived in the 1980s with a sort of uncompromising amount of violence that was so open in the streets. But of course, you could come here without seeing it, just as you could go to Mexico without seeing it, but it's there.
Yep. Yes. And I think that's very true.
Yeah.
We just spent 6 months in Mexico prior to what we're doing now. And, you know, we didn't have to deal with anything that's going on down there. We avoided Acapulco and Cancun and the northern areas. But we had a wonderful time.
It's a beautiful country and just so very culturally rich. But I say, you know, it's that sort of perceived aggression that's there. You probably saw heavily armed police at certain parts on the roads, certain areas. So it's not in your face, but it's there.
Yes. You know, speaking of Mexico and Colombia, one of the things that I keep thinking about that you mentioned is the word gringo. Mm. In Mexico, it is so derogatory. But in Colombia, the impression I've gathered is that it's not the case, that it's not as derogatory.
Oh, we're all gringos. Anyone from not in Colombia is a gringo. Well, you know, anyone who's not, a white foreigner is a gringo. I've been gringo now for 13 years. At the beginning, it sort of bothered me, and I do see other people saying, no, soy gringo, soy inglés, or soy belga, or soy... Just, you know, take it on.
Extranjero.
Yeah. It's not derogatory. It's just the word. And by the same rationale, if you are of Asian descent, you're Chino. I mean, it's not meant as an insult.
Just a simplification.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's going to be interesting.
In Mexico, you would hear güero. If they were not trying to be offensive, then that I would you'd get called güero.
Güero. Que onda güero?
Like light-skinned person.
Okay. So you shouldn't worry about the gringo issue. So we've talked up a little bit about the violence in Mexico. We touched on that and sort of, let's say, the perceived violence that goes on, the aggression that ripples beneath it. What are your fears about the security situation in Colombia? And does your wife have a different, let's say, point of view?
Again, when I initially started looking at Colombia, we were headed to Medellin. And one of the ways I researched was I got on Facebook, and maybe that wasn't the best way, but it was a good way to start and get some questions answered and hear other people's questions. But really what kept resonating with me was the comments saying, oh, you'll get mugged. You're going to get mugged. People just accept it here. It's just the way of life. And it's like, if you live here long enough, you're going to have to deal with it. And that's why you only carry what you need. You only have your flip phone, and you don't flash stuff around. Your expression of dar papaya, will definitely be remembered when I'm walking the streets.
Yeah, I don't know which is worse for being mugged, but I know that there's this one major street that leads up the hill from the metro station, I guess El Poblado, up towards Parque Lleras and beyond, where, you know, you're a target. And what can you do?
Yeah.
When you have such a division between rich and poor and have nots, there's always going to be these inequalities and so on. I've been mugged in Bogota. That was, I would say it was my own fault. It was 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the evening on a Sunday when the downtown area is completely empty. My wife had left her bag the day before at a party.
Oh.
So we went to go and get it. And a little kid, I mean, he was a kid. He was like 13 or 14. Clearly a street kid who smokes bazooko came up. He just picked a piece of glass that was on the ground. You know, someone had thrown away a broken pane of glass. He picked it up, held it to my neck and says, give me your money. All I had on me was 10,000 pesos. So we're looking at, you know, at the moment, $3. I gave it to him. God knows how much that bought him. You know, we went on with our lives. I had a little bit of trauma. Of course I did. But these things happen. It was idiocy on my part. We were dando papaya.
Mm-hmm. Which I got to tell you, I think would make a great name for a Thai restaurant. But I think that growing up in Thailand and us having traveled, we realized that the other cultures are different. And you know, in Thailand, 6 o'clock in the evening is a big deal. That's it's a completely different world after 7 o'clock. The well-to-do, respectable people all go home, and the people who maybe don't have the best intentions, they go out and get on their scooters and they're riding around. And I mean, that's particular towns and maybe a few years ago, but you learn that you don't need to be out at night if you're not looking for trouble, maybe.
Well, yeah, and you know, when we talk back about Medellin or Bogota and the big cities, you just behave as you would in a big city anywhere in the world. Of course, the
exactly
issues are increased; they're magnified in a city in Latin America. With all respect to these cities and their inhabitants, but they're magnified, and so you take a little bit more precaution. And I understand that you were looking at Medellin as a potential base, but of course it is a huge base for the digital nomad community now. So you'd be one of many should you decide to set up there.
It seems to be. And that's one question that I have that I may need to go to Colombia to really know is how the infrastructure for the internet and connectivity is. You know, is it all fiber optic, or am I dealing with broadband in these smaller towns, and how well will it work?
Well, I can tell you, sitting here in a small town in the rural Caribbean region, that my internet is very, very bad.
Oh, darn, I was really hoping you were about to say something else.
No, and no fiber optic. Probably in Medellin, Bogota, some of the newer buildings have fiber optics, but I wouldn't say it's the norm. I have here in this colonial house where I'm located, I have my little guest house down the road. Because of the thickness of the colonial walls, a lot of the internet doesn't penetrate certain parts of the area. So there's sort of like the section of the house where people can sit with their computers. I have the best, and I think it's only like 2 megas or something that's possible here. But it's very difficult. And then, of course, the power goes. So, of course, the internet goes when that happens, and the power goes a lot of the time. And, fingers crossed that nothing happens during this recording, but it's always possible. The big cities, you're going to be connected.
We've been traveling around the U.S. And trying a few different ways for me to do what I do, which is teach online early in the mornings. One way I think that will work in Colombia, worked in Mexico, is to use Airbnb to find locations that boast having strong internet, and then I'll be able to hopefully count on that.
Yeah.
But I have a couple backups too. There's a Wi-Fi hotspots, like a TEP wireless and things like that work.
You're gonna, I mean, with Airbnb is an interesting situation because people have caught on to it reasonably late here. And in a place like Medellin or Bogota, local people who thought, oh, hang on, we can, especially in Cartagena, local people have said, oh, this is a great way of getting some hard currency, some dollars. And so a lot of the places are not so great. You know, it's just people taking full advantage that you're going to reserve in advance from overseas. Do good research on these. But there are some companies that manage their properties through Airbnb, and they tend to be a bit better. But it's all about sitting down and filtering through. I feel that this conversation is a bit like a how-to Columbia book, you know?
It could be.
You've got the idea of smaller cities. We've talked about the coffee zone. Is there anywhere else that has sort of appealed to you as you do your research?
I don't know if Bucaramanga is worth stopping at, but when we leave Cartagena and Santa Marta, be looking at that area, San Gil, Jardín. One thing that really is baffling us, we love beaches. But it seems like the entire Pacific coast is just a forest, just like national forest or something. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But the information on the Pacific coast comes in fits and spurts. It's one of my most favorite places in the country, but I haven't been in, I would say, 8 or 9 years. There's just too much to see here.
Wow.
There are beaches. But they're natural beaches. I'm not going to say like that long, sweeping white sand. It's the Pacific. These are rough beaches where the jungle tumbles into the ocean and it's waterfalls. It's very much dramatic.
Gorgeous.
That's spectacular. Awesome. It's spectacular. But of course, out there, you're going to have connectivity problems. I mean, the infrastructure is very poor. The best way of spending some time out there are the kind of eco lodges type accommodation, because if you're out in the wilds where you want to be, because that's where, you know, it's nature in all of its glory, you're going to need someone to feed you too. otherwise, you can end up in the small towns, but, you know, and they can sell you food to eat, but they're not set up for it. You know, it's not, there's not the infrastructure, in place for this. It's very much, you're stepping back in time. It's people on the Pacific coast would likely refer, and I've seen it written, that the rest of Colombia has turned their back on the Pacific coast.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a tough one. Go on.
It seems to me that in the future, as tourism develops, I could see, maybe that becoming more attractive to the government. I don't know.
It's a big sigh on this one. They want to build another port around Tumaco and via Malaga. And that's the big port at Buenaventura. But these aren't, you know, these cities aren't good places at the moment. Wonderful people, wonderful scenery. They're not great places. They're, you know, major transshipment points. The area for being so overlooked with its mangroves and channels and canals and so on is very easy for people to hide. I don't want to speak so negatively about it, but because it's so overlooked, it's just one of those very, very complicated areas.
At the same time, those complications sometimes protect those areas. Maybe it's good that there's not a bunch of construction and change.
I mean, it's true. There are these statistics that have come out. If we take Colombia as a whole, that the protection of the forests, the jungles, and so on has been greater due to our lack of say, development into these areas because of the guerrilla groups and so on. But, you know, we're in the 21st century now. I'm not saying that we should be building in these areas, but that the people who have lived such a marginalized existence have the right to basic human rights, let's say, healthcare, schooling, drinking water,
yeah.
Things that are so we take for granted, you and I. And out there, it's, you know, they don't have drains and so on in these small towns in the middle of nowhere. But so tell us a little bit. We're starting to come towards the end of this. It's very interesting to hear your thoughts about Colombia prior to coming. But what kind of goals do you have about spending here 2 months, maybe longer, because you guys are very flexible in this? What do you hope to achieve in this longer visit? This isn't a fleeting 2 weeks. So this is what's going to be interesting to my listeners, is how do you feel you're going to benefit or grow from these 2 months?
You know, I really enjoy human behavior and seeing how different groups deal with common problems and find unique solutions to them. So I'll really be looking to see how Colombians just live and see some of their unique behaviors. I like to find endemic foods. It seems like Colombia has a plethora of fruits that I've never seen before. Some that are very, very similar to other things. I think these are things that when we first get to Cartagena, we're going to be going to the market and then looking forward to getting out into some of the smaller areas and seeing how regular people just live their lives. My wife's a vegetarian, so I know one thing on her mind is how she's going to deal with being a vegetarian in Colombia. Like, what will the options be? How used to beans will she be by the end of the trip? We have another friend who travels quite a bit, she adores Colombia, and she's a vegan, and she seems to have no difficulties. So we're confident there won't be too many problems there.
You know how to live, you know what you need, you know how to balance your meals. You should be okay. It's not easy, but then I say that from a perspective of an omnivore. I eat everything. You know, when I look at the regular platters in a regular restaurant, the vegetarian options are not widely publicized, but in the main cities you'll find it, and especially in the tourist zones you'll find the vegetarian options. But you end up in a small town and he says, well, what do you have that's vegetarian? Well, we have this soup, but it's made from a base of beef broth. Yeah, but it's vegetarian. There's no meat in there. So she's going to have to be careful, but I would suggest, you know, a lot of the time cooking at home, because that's the way you're going to be safest in this regard.
Yep. Safest. And like I said, she's really interested in checking these markets out and finding ingredients that she hasn't worked with before and learning about them. I'm not too worried about food. We'll be fine. But one other thing that I am interested in learning about when I get to Colombia is how Colombia and Venezuela are working together, because not working together, but dealing with each other, because it seems like Venezuela, a lot of people are leaving there and coming into Colombia because of the difficulties. And the impression I get is that Colombia is very accepting of that, very open. And, you know, coming from America, where there's such animosity towards immigration at the moment, and the rest of the world having the same issue, it seems. That's interesting to me, how brotherly and how much love there is in South America for each other.
That's a really good topic of conversation, because I can't remember the official figure, but it's over 1 million now Venezuelans in Colombia. But you also have to consider that there are probably between 40 to 60,000 Venezuelans at any given point crossing through Colombia to get elsewhere. Something about South America is that there is a, I don't know if it's because of a shared history, the region, you know,
sort of the Bolivar connection.
Bolivar connection, throwing off the yoke of the imperial Spanish designs, but there's something shared and a solidarity between the countries. That said, there are mutterings of discontent now towards Venezuela. And I know that Chile, Peru, and I think Ecuador are toughening their stance towards Venezuelans coming in. I would assume Brazil as well, but I'm not informed on that. Colombia, there's a different situation in that so many Venezuelans come with a Colombian background or a Colombian parent, because that border between the two countries is so big and porous, and the relationship is so close. Colombian border has been left open for Venezuelans. You can come on your passports that are out of date, your ID cards. You can come in, you can register, and then you can legally work on those documents. My personal feeling is that if he could, the president would try and crack down a little bit on this fluid passage of Venezuelans, but he really has no choice but to remain, in inverted commas, the humanitarian, and keep this humanitarian option open, which I don't applaud the president for a great deal of things, but I applaud him for this, as we have to. The situation is so bad next door that we have to. But you'll see in the main cities when you're here, every single traffic light is a Venezuelan with a child asking for money. Colombia didn't need this disaster right now in a period of financial, let's say, uncertainty, and to take on the mantle of looking after Venezuelans. But for you, coming from the US, this will be very, very interesting to watch. Of course, there are mutterings of discontent amongst people. The Venezuelans, they're thieves. The Venezuelans, they're beggars. They're this, they're that. But what option really do we have but to take them in?
I think the short-term pain will prove valuable in the future. It won't hinder Colombia, but I think Colombia is such a rich, diverse, and prominent country in South America that it will absorb this pain like it has others and come out the end stronger. And I really just don't think there's any stopping it. But, you know, Colombia now, everybody is turning and looking for a new place to call home or to go travel. And it offers a lot of opportunities and excitement, I think.
It's true. I mean, Colombia does have everything. And I say week in, week out that, you know, I go through peaks and troughs, but I'm sitting here in a beautiful colonial house that's my own. I'm looking out the window at a mango tree and at the bell tower of a colonial church, and the lady who sells tinto will come round at 11. We'll have a nice chat. It's just, there is something very human, very warm, and very special about Colombia in spite of everything here, you know. And I think this is one thing that you're really going to enjoy. But you're in Idaho. I suppose you're in a small town there. The attitudes must be very similar.
Potentially, this small town, it only has a population of like 60 people, and they make all their money in this month of the year. So many people come up here to just see the beauty, and they, have a couple festivals, and it gets really busy, and then it goes back to 60 people.
Does it say outside unincorporated population 60?
Yeah.
I've passed through a few of towns. I've never been to Idaho, but I have been to sort of places like Nebraska and Iowa, and you see these and South Dakota, see these signs. Wonderful. I can just picture it. It's a big change. A big change, Idaho to Columbia.
Love it. You know, one other goal that interests us as we travel to Columbia and elsewhere is the opportunity to get involved with the communities and volunteer. We've tried it a few other places, and it really helps a person understand how the community works and what their needs are, and then to leave thinking, you know, I was a part of that and maybe helped a little bit and wasn't just a tourist. So that's,
yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you feel you could participate in helping? What expertise could you bring to the table?
You know, I just listened to your Zika podcast, and I thought, well, gosh, I could have that app on my phone and go around and knock on doors and ask questions. But besides from that, there always seems to be opportunities to help the community when we've traveled. I don't know what Columbia will be like, but I imagine I've already done a little bit of research. There's groups in Medellin, of course, and there will most likely be other groups that we'll encounter.
Definitely.
We'll play that one by ear. Well, yeah. When we went to Mexico, we were volunteered with a dog group and helped take care of dogs and spay and neuter dogs that were on the street. So we'll see.
So get in touch with our friends at Cartagena Paws. CartagenaPaws.com. Okay. They rescue street dogs and help them find new homes in the U.S. largely.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
interesting. And
you can take them as sort of passengers back to the U.S. once they've got all their papers and they're clean and they go up to adoptive homes in the U.S. I think the owner's name is Maureen Couture. I think she's from Florida, I think, but she lives and she's married to a Cartagenero, and she's awesome. Oh. The job that they're doing is incredible because, of course, the street dog problem in these cities is rife. She's a phenomenal, caring person.
I'm always surprised to hear that people are bringing dogs to other countries. Like there's a dog shortage in Canada and America.
Yeah, I know, but I always thought
it's wonderful though. People. Yeah,
it is definitely. Well, listen, really interesting to hear about your hopes, your thoughts prior to coming. This is a conversation that I've not had before on Columbia Calling. We've always done it sort of post and of course further down the line, and usually quite political, but this has stayed clear of that aside from the like the Venezuela question. But really interesting to hear about what you hope to achieve and hope to see, and of course, you know, a little bit of the concerns and so on. And I thank you for getting in touch, because this is a nice sort of, let's say, reflection on how great Columbia is, that it continues to appeal to people from all over. I realize you're from Chicago originally, but now in a town of 60 in Idaho and very well traveled. So let me take this moment to say, Jeff Brown, thank you so much for being on this episode 284 of the Columbia Calling podcast.
Richard, thank you very much. And I'll keep in touch. And, you know, as our travels continue, perhaps I can share with you maybe some of the revelations we've had about Columbia.
Definitely. And I turn up in the weirdest places, so at some point we'll probably have a coffee. So it would be a great pleasure to sit down with yourself and your wife, and to hear, as you say, these revelations. Well, that's Columbia Calling, episode 284 for this week. We've been speaking to Jeff Brown up in Idaho, up there on the border with Canada, next door to Washington State and so on. Very interesting to hear his hopes and thoughts about Columbia prior to coming, and why Columbia. Just allowing us to reflect a little bit for those of us here or those of us overseas who have been to Columbia, why this country is so amazingly great. Anyway, so that's me signing off this week. We're going to have another person on next week, I believe. We're going to get Wally Broderick, who you'll remember from many, many moons ago, who was talking about the prison system in Colombia. Well, Wally himself now has set up a business with ex-FARC combatants making beer. I can't remember what it's called, but the beer is now sold in downtown Bogota. Anyway, he's, you know, put his money where his mouth is and is trying to help ex-combatants reintegrate into society in Colombia. So a good news story there. In addition to this good news story, I hope you enjoyed last week's with the mapping of Zika and dengue potential hotspots, talking about the startup in San Francisco and Silicon Valley called Premise. Anyway, that's me signing off. I'm Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling. And thank you for listening once again. Bye-bye. La